This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Everybody's talking about it, and we'd love you to as well as we go through the conversation on the chats, Substack, YouTube, Facebook, wherever you're watching. Weigh in, and we want to see your opinion. Mackenzie Shirilla, the crash, is what we're talking about. She was 17 when she was charged with four counts of murder for driving her car into a building in Strongsville, Ohio, killing Dominic Russo and Davion Flanagan. Her defense attorney raised the POTS diagnosis at trial, a condition that can cause fainting and loss of consciousness, but never really called any medical experts. So that really didn't weigh all that much on the judge. No jury here. No records, no testimony after the conviction. A neurologist found evidence consistent with a medical episode. The opinion was submitted in a post-conviction petition filed one day past Ohio's deadline. And that's where a lot of the conversation sits right now on Mackenzie Shirilla and the crash. Joining us to discuss, and we're going to go into three different parts here today, talking about the defense. Did they fail Mackenzie Shirilla? Also, we're going to look at the prosecution. Was it overreach? And what about going forward? Does she have a path to freedom at some point in time? I guess that really is up to her. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube with us. And of course, Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, is with us as well. Bob,
T,
I'm gonna start with it with you on this. I didn't know a ton about the case until I watched the Netflix doc, and then I didn't follow the trial when it was going on. I know you didn't either. I don't think any of us really did. So I'm catching up, but I feel like I've got a good catch up in the last week or two. After you watched the doc, after you just saw the surface information of everything that everybody's talking about, and we'll go into everything that's been dug into further in a little bit. We're not just talking surface here. What was your reaction to the case?
Something like this. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I go into every Netflix documentary knowing that there's going to be gaping holes in what happened during the trial itself. So I knew that, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at it from my perspective saying, wow, seems like this defense attorney really shit the bed. That was the way I walked away from it. I was watching it with Allie, and we were both like, you know, like, we need to cover this because, number one, I want to see if I can find the trial, which I have not been able to find, by the way, online. People in my chat were saying the court TV, because it was a bench trial, meaning that there was no jury, and it was short. It was a couple of days, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, I desperately looked around for it. I couldn't find it. If anybody in chat is aware of where it might be,
yeah.
I know that they aired victim impact panels or the victim impact statements. I think they have the sentencing, but like, as far as the entire trial being somewhere, I'm not aware of it. And I'd really like to watch it.
Yeah.
Because like I said, there's just a lot of gaping holes, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's start with, because I want to talk about the defense in this this segment and how they served her, did not serve her. One of the big things that people are talking about after the fact from the documentary, the defense attorney raising the POTS diagnosis, but almost somewhat passively, if you will, of like, well, if you don't think it's that, maybe it's this. It's kind of how it feels like. The POTS diagnosis is essentially kind of a blood pressure issue where you stand up, you don't see things for a moment, you could black out. It happens a lot at that sort of age, but it can go on into adulthood and be a full-fledged diagnosis and condition. A lot of people have said, yeah, I don't think that really applies. There's an expert that says it does, but that expert never also got a chance to take the stand in this. Let's talk about that. The arguments for this being a medical emergency, whether it be POTS or whether it be something else that could have been going on here. How, in your opinion, as a defense attorney, how was that handled at trial? Was that adequately shown to the judge as a viable explanation? Could it have been shown to the judge as a viable explanation, or is it kind of a reach no matter how you look at it?
No, it was not addressed at all. I don't consider him mentioning it in opening and then mom talking about a diagnosis in any way, shape, or form handling that at all.
Yeah.
You know, it like that was the thing that had me scratching on my, because if this case lands on my desk and she tells me about this POTS diagnosis, I mean, the very first thing I'm doing is having her go get a full neurological examination, like the whole kit and caboodle, because that becomes your case.
Yeah.
I mean, because if it's not that, it was intentional and she's fucking guilty and she's going down. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only way that I could see to build any kind of reasonable doubt in this case. So I could not think of a tactical reason to announce to the judge. And again, this is a bench trial, not a jury trial, which means the judge is the trier of fact. It's the person making all the decisions, not only on what comes in and what stays out in terms of evidence, but in terms of whether the defendant is guilty or not guilty. So go ahead. I can hear you.
I want to ask one question. And I know I don't mean to step on you, Robin, or anything, because I know you got questions too. When it comes to a bench trial, Bob, do you typically see the level of expert witnesses being called up as you would with a jury trial? Is there a difference in that sort of a setting? Should there be a difference in that sort of a setting?
I think that there is. You're still going to need your experts.
Yeah. Because,
I mean, think of it in terms of your client gets convicted and for the purposes of appeal, okay, you need to put on essentially the same trial. Obviously, there's going to be things that you're not going to have to do in a bench trial with that particular witness that you might have to do with a jury, such as demonstratives, you know, where you have big boards blown up and, you know, they're explaining complex theories or scientific things that you know, might be over the jury's heads without a big, giant display for them to look at. But when you have a judge, you don't have to go as far. As far as putting on the evidence that this girl was actually diagnosed with POTS, here are the medical records. This is the treating physician, because without that evidence, you've got nothing. This isn't a trust me, bro situation. Whether it's whether it's a judge or a jury, you have to put on the evidence. So as far as kind of the bells and whistles that you can skip when you're doing a bench trial, you can push that to the side. You know, some of the things that you have to do, and that even goes to kind of the bravado by which you're trying the case, and, you know, where you may overact for the benefit of a jury, be more dramatic. You know, there is a certain amount of acting that goes on in the trial. You know, with that, with the judge, you can just put that to the side as well. So, you know, you're really focusing on the facts and the evidence in that particular situation, because none of that other stuff that you're talking about is going to impact the judge the way that it would impact jurors.
Sure.
So, you know, you absolutely have to put the evidence on any kind of medical evidence that you plan on making a part of your defense. And in my estimation, the medical side of this was the entire defense and they put none of it on.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, so here's my take on it. Cause again, I take every single data point as individually building or not building. And again, and this is your great optic on this, Bob, is the fact that like you always say, we don't know what's going on in our brain. And especially when the only data we're getting is from a Netflix edited presentation of her life, it's hard to know what the truth is. But here's what I saw because of what the data points I saw from her before. And I'm curious as to maybe why this was a reason why they didn't put this on. So we'll give the defense counsel benefit of the doubt that he's not a complete idiot, only half, not bringing this up, is it seemed like an afterthought. It didn't seem like, in other words, it wasn't their first thought reading and watching the family, the mother, the father, and her behavior when they found out about this. Their first thought was not like, oh my God, it's that damn POTS again kicking in. It was like, it wasn't even mentioned until everything looked like it was going south. That was my take on it, because as we said yesterday, you know, caveat for our audience, which everyone hates the fact that not everyone, but that she's guilty. She caused her death, but I do not believe, because these initial data points, that it was her intention to kill people. Her intention was to fear them into her compliance that she wanted through threatening them with their lives in a vehicle, which she'd done before. And so, not aware of the fact, because she's an idiot and a self-centered narcissist, that actions could actually get someone killed, including herself.
Right.
That aside, when you see that data point then as the intent, and then the parents seemingly, again, conjecturally, saw that as most likely the intent as well. And when they saw things are going south in a trial, then they say, oh, wait. Oh, what? POTS, let's try POTS. That's the way I took it.
Yeah, kind of felt like that. But I mean, that is how the doc framed it. But is that right? Is that how you would say, Bob, it came through in the court as well?
Well, I mean, it didn't come through in court. Like the POTS thing was right. Not raised with any substantive evidence. Mom sitting on there saying that she was diagnosed in 2017 without providing any evidence.
That's what I'm saying. It was raised, but it was not raised. It was raised in such a half-assed way that it really held no substance.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I don't know who to blame for that.
Yeah.
You know what
I
mean? Because we're not a party to the conversation
taking
place between Sharilla and her lawyer. We're not a party to the conversations that are taking place between, well, some of them we are, you know, the jail calls, obviously, but, you know, the behind the scenes prior to, you know, trial happening and, you know, wherever they were able to have any kind of conversation, which would have been tough between mother and daughter in terms of once she's in, they're recording everything, you know, they're overhearing everything, as we know, because those jail calls came out and, you know, some are pre-trial, some are post-trial, and they're, you know, they're damning in the sense of trying to put the pieces together on how full of shit is Mackenzie Sharilla. You know what I mean? Because like when you get to that side of it, like, well, I don't remember. I don't have any recollection of it. Now, neurologically speaking, that's not some kind of impossibility. I could see a lot of reasons for that happening in that kind of a high stress situation leading up to them hitting the wall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But again, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
So I need to bring on a neurologist to explain that, you know? So whatever was going on, and I hear exactly what your guys are saying, because it seems like that's the attorney's job, man.
Yeah.
Like that's the fucking attorney's job. When I get this case again, if it comes on my desk and I go talk to my client for the first time and it's, you know, and wherever she's being held, and I'm getting a attorney client room within the jail, and you know, theoretically you're having privacy, right? They're not listening in, so I'm able to openly communicate with my client. And in this situation, where I typically don't ask the question, "Did you do it?" In this particular circumstance, I'm going to ask, "Are you full of shit about not being able to remember anything?" Because that's something I need to know. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you're telling me the truth, then I'm going to go to your family and I'm going to have them mortgage the house, because we need to get experts in on this case that are going to be able to substantiate what you're saying to me. If you're telling me that you're telling me the truth, that you blacked out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like the problem from her perspective is, when does she black out? Because, you know, if you've seen the path, you've got the straightaway where she's gunning it. And, you know, and we pulled up on our live, we pulled up like the Google map, because I'm like, I would need to, like, it drove me nuts in the whole Netflix thing. I'm like, why didn't they show the whole fucking path?
Yeah.
Like just a clear graphic of exactly, you know, they show her turning calmly, perfectly, you know, driving like a champ.
With the blinker on. Turn.
Yeah. With the blinker, the whole thing. And then all of a sudden she guns it. Right. So you can imagine what's going on in the car. Right. Yeah. We heard enough of her interactions with Dom to have a pretty good idea of what's going on in that car. What the impetus of the argument was, I have no idea. It was probably some shit like, you know,
relationships. That's the impetus. Well,
probably the pointless shit that people at 17 argue about.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So
it's a different day.
But like to your point to both of you guys, I mean, I can't help but think that would have been the first thing that the attorney would have addressed. Because if you're trying to think of a defense here, that is the only defense that exists in my world. I'm like, I'm going to the family who I can speak freely with. I'm like, is there any way that she would pass out? And you would think that the first thing that would pop up in that conversation, she's like, oh, yeah, she has POTS. She was diagnosed. You know, so you would have thought that would have happened immediately.
Yeah. Like, where did this failure come into place? Exactly. Here is the question.
That's what we don't know.
Did mom reveal this right away, or dad, and it was not latched onto by the attorney as a lane to go down? Or was this like last minute? It's like, oh, by the way, like, why didn't you tell me that at the beginning or anywhere near? I mean, who knows? I mean, we don't know the answer to that. What we do know is this, the post-conviction petition with that expert opinion in was filed one day late, past Ohio's 365-day deadline. So they have 365 days, a full year, to file this petition, and they fuck it up still. So they fucked up the trial and getting this in. And then, okay, here's your window. Get your petition in, and you miss it by a day. I'm not a attorney, Bob. I don't know how this stuff works. I imagine, you know, you're gonna wait till the last minute if you're waiting on experts or anything that could possibly benefit your case to get it in, unless you are, okay, we got everything we need. And I can see maybe you're waiting to the last minute, but still, how do you screw this up when it's like, this is your window. This is your in to at least attempt to get an appeal going here. And you're tardy on it.
Makes
sense of that to me. Or is there no sense to be made?
I mean, it's a massive fuck up.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, talking one day and it's because of leap year.
This is like Seinfeld-y or something, you know?
And, you know, but that is literally the kind of mistake that keeps lawyers up all night. Like, it's kind of shit where you fuck up like that, where there's no one doing it. There's, you know, I mean, they're trying. They send it up to the Ohio Supreme Court to have them, you know, but like, it's a hard and fast rule. There are deadlines. Yeah. In the law that are fucking drop dead deadlines. And if you blow it, you blew it. You've completely committed malpractice, and there's no way around it. And, you know, in a civil case, it's devastating in a much different way. 'Cause you know what? You're going to end up, you know, hitting your malpractice insurance and paying the client out from your policy. I mean, that's why you carry it, because mistakes can be made.
Sure.
They're calendared wrong. You know, obviously, like, whatever happened, they didn't take to it. You know, waiting to the last fucking day to file anything with a statute with a limitation running on you is bad practice in general. I mean, it happens. You know, I mean,
sure.
But this thing is devastating because it's relating to her liberty, her freedom. You know, there is no paying what you would have made in the civil case type remedy for this. In this, she's fucked. You know, so this is literally the kind of shit you wake up in like in a sweat at 3 a.m. for the rest of your life on this type of mistake. It's why I'm always saying, I don't know of a tougher gig than being a defense attorney because of what is at stake. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, the two most important things are your health and your liberty, you know, in terms of just kind of overall, not taking into account, obviously, our families and things, but as a person, as a human being walking on the planet, your health and your freedom are the two biggest things out there, right? I mean, everything else, money comes and goes. It's all bullshit. Your health and your freedom. So, you know, when we're dealing with somebody's liberty and or their life in a death penalty case, the weight of that is oppressive, you know? And when you do it for decades, man, it really takes a toll on defense attorneys. So, yeah, I don't know what happened with that. I think that the trial lawyer and the lawyer that made that mistake were two different attorneys. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% on that.
Yeah,
but I don't want to put that on the trial.
Sure. Lawyer. Yeah.
It's not good practice to have the trial lawyer file an appeal or post-conviction relief stuff anyway. Like, you need somebody else, especially post-conviction relief stuff, because that's where you're really leaning into ineffective assistance of counsel, which, as we've talked about, would be something that if I were handling a post-conviction, I'd be looking pretty heavily at.
Yeah, you need somebody that knows that lane.
I'm also curious about this thing. I want to give the attorneys more benefit of the doubt, because I think the parents are so horrendous in this, and I think they need to be more culpable for what they created and their participation in it. Because the way I see this memory loss as an excuse for her, and we don't know, like you said, hasn't been tested, and it's the first thing you do, and Bob, that'd be a great question. Are you full of shit or not full of shit on this? Because everything depends on it. I think that was such a paramount question. And so let's have a conjecture that he asked that question, because I'll give benefit of doubt. He's got reps in doing his job like you, man, and he wants to do the righteous work the righteous way for his client. And based on, again, we only know what Netflix presented us, but based on a dad we're seeing, I can envision a situation, because a dad actually said it. I know when my daughter's lying, man. I'm good. She immediately grabbed to the defense she did of, I don't remember. And dad's going to now stand with it. And mother's going to stand with her. And so as the defense counsel's asking, did you do it or not do it? Do you remember or not remember? They all kind of rallying the flag around that. And so they're pushed aside. They didn't even think of, in my mind, from the data were presented, they didn't even think of this alternate idea of Potts until after the ship was sinking, because they're thinking she didn't do it. She gave appropriate responses towards the loss of life when the parents presented what her reaction was. That was actually appropriate. That's actually an empathetic, not someone intentionally doing it to other people, right? And so my thought process was, things didn't come up in time because they never even thought of it. This was an afterthought. And I think, do you think that could have impacted the filing timing as well? Or was it just a screw up on the attorney side?
I mean, are you talking about for the trial, or are you talking about for the post-conviction petition?
Either both.
Again, Robin, in that situation, you know, because the way that these things go is something like this goes down. You know, the family gets on the internet. They start looking for lawyers in their area. They start looking for criminal lawyers. They try to narrow it down to exactly the type of lawyer that they think that they need. They call. They don't know what kind of questions to ask. They don't know any of the things that really should be probed with that attorney in the calls. Like, I would always tell potential clients, I'm like, call a bunch of lawyers. You know, it's like you've seen what I've done in my career. You know, I have, you know, my records out there. And, you know, I mean, we're trial lawyers. We're very aggressive. You know, I mean, we may not be your cup of tea, you know, because, I mean, frankly, aggressive lawyers can make defendants nervous, you know, because they worry about, like, are you pissing the judge off? You know what I mean? Like, so
all shit matters, man.
It does. Like, all that shit matters. So, you know, but I'm always telling people, I'm like, you can't be afraid to ask lawyers how successful they are in terms of trial work. You know, like, have you ever tried a case? Start with that. You know, like, and this guy clearly,
right.
I mean, you only want my cousin Vinny, who turned out to be, you know, spectacular in the most unconventional way possible. But, you know, like, you got to ask those questions. So when they kind of land on the lawyer, all right, and he looked like he was an experienced attorney. He was an older gentleman. I'm not familiar with him. I thought that I read something that he was, you know, well thought of.
Yeah.
You know, by attorneys in the area. And, you know, you're having a very candid conversation with the parents who are going to be paying the fee. Now, they're not your client.
Yeah.
You know, but in terms of having access to Mackenzie and kind of who she is, they're an excellent resource, right? Yeah. And no disrespect to dad, but dad's full of shit. Like no one's a human lie detector. I guarantee you, Mackenzie lied to his ass 1,000 times and he had no idea during the course of the run. And that's no indictment on dad. That's what teenagers do. You know, yeah. I mean, I like to think that I can read my kids like an open book as well, but I guarantee you they've lied to me on many occasions.
Yeah. And you're not going on a dock going, oh, whatever she says is like, no. He's not in touch with the reality of a teenage girl, clearly, in that dock.
Exactly. And here's where I'm at with it, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's talking about the culpability of the parents is something different. And I hope that we're going to get into that conversation because it's a different conversation. Yeah. But in terms of, I put it on the lawyer. The parents aren't attorneys. They don't have to create a defense. That is entirely what they're paying a lawyer a bunch of money to do. So if he doesn't go in when he starts getting the discovery and say, all right, well, Mackenzie's saying that she blacked out. Okay, we know this, right? That's her thing. And then at some point she's saying she doesn't remember shit. Now, you know, I'm coming to the family. I'm saying, like, that conversation, okay, is there any medical reason that we're aware of that might have happened? And that's when the POTS thing would come up, right? Immediately. Like, if it's true, in my chat, and I know you guys are taking a bunch of shit, first time you covered it, much like Allie and I were on our chat, because we're just looking at it with general curiosity. We're asking probing questions. We're doing what we do. Mm-hmm. We're digging into a fucking case. I didn't watch the trial, so I don't have an opinion on it yet. Yeah. Like, I get that she's a narcissistic potential psychopath. I get that. I can see that. However, there does exist a possibility because of this pot shit that was dangled in front of us with no evidence that it actually existed, but it got my mind spinning. I'm like, all right, I got something here. That's why I was like, I'm leaning into that completely. And I'm finding out immediately when I get the fact pattern, if that's a possibility in terms of her blacking out, you know, because the other part of it, in terms of the no memory, is a different aspect of it.
It is.
You know, people, the human mind is a very complicated thing, and I'm going to a neurologist. I'm putting a neurologist on the stand. If that's what our defense is going to be. But again, it all boils down to that initial conversation that I'm having with her. Are you full of shit? Honestly, I need you not to fucking lie to me right now. Do you have no recollection what happened that night? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I'm probing her. I'm not just taking her answer at face value. I'm going at her as her lawyer. I'm going to cross-examine her.
The thing is, she held a lot of the cards here too. And I want to go to our next chapter here in a second, but I just want to say this. She held the cards. She could have said, we got into an argument and I was mad. I hit the gas. They were trying to steer. I mean, she could have said 1,000 stories.
1,000 things.
That would have made you go, well, that was chaos in a fucking vehicle. Okay. Right. You weren't trying to kill your friends. You were all fucking nuts.
Yeah.
But she didn't. She didn't. She's still sticking with, I don't remember. And I believe she might not actually remember. That doesn't mean that she couldn't be a narcissistic little bitch and was sitting there going, I'm going to scare the shit out of these guys and floor it. And then the last minute, I'm going to slam on the brake or whatever, and we'll all be fine. Because kids do that sort of shit all the time. If you've never been in a car with a friend that does that short sort of shit at some point in your life and you're a grown-ass adult, consider yourself lucky because people do that sort of shit. And kids don't consider, hey, we might die by doing this. Could that have been the possibility? Yeah, it really is. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue the conversation.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.